You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProntPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is Veterans Day, and I thought it's fitting to listen to our president, Donald Trump, give a speech. And this is somewhat of an historic speech because Donald Trump is the first president of the United States to address and review the New York City's, and this is their 100th anniversary, they have a parade every year. Now, I'm from New York City, and I was commissioned a second lieutenant in the Air Force after I graduated from college. It was a very, very rainy day, and everyone was soaked, and our gowns ran. But then we changed in our clothes, had a snack, and we headed off to the afternoon ceremony that was held indoors, where we were commissioned in my situation into the Air Force, but the Army, it was people that were in Reserve Officer Training Corps, ROTC, at the University Heights campus. So this was many decades ago, because they don't own that campus anymore. That was New York University. I was fortunate, though, some of the people went to Vietnam. I was not selected. Instead, I spent over 4 years doing graduate work at Berkeley, but eventually I knew I had a commitment of 4 years. And most people that go through university reserve officer training corps, where they get their commissions upon graduation, they do have a 4-year commitment. Now, I wanted to be a pilot in the Air Force. Unfortunately, my eyesight, my junior, senior year in high school, went. It wasn't 2020 anymore. And at that time, the United States Air Force Academy, I had an appointment, I'll even date myself, by Lyndon Baines Johnson. He was vice president then. So it was a long time ago. But an appointment didn't guarantee that you could go to the Air Force Academy because you had to pass a physical exam. Now, I knew it was doubtful the Air Force, at that time, they would not take you. It's totally changed now. I wanted to be a pilot. They would not accept anyone at the Air Force Academy then. And I had friends, interesting enough, when I was in the F-15, I spent 5 years in the F-15 Systems Programs Office. I was talking to someone that actually went to the Air Force Academy then, and I said, well, how was it? He says, I still have nightmares. So just because you can get in the Air Force Academy, at that time, they all were going to be pilots, and they wanted 20/20 vision. Now they take, and it was strictly men, they take men and women, and they realize not everyone, A, wants to be a pilot, still wants to be in the Air Force. So it's changed radically in the decades since I was in the military. I feel that I had a great career in the Air Force. I actually got a regular commission. I'm giving you this I identify with the veterans. And I served my country proudly for 5 years and then decided, like many officers do, to pursue a career in the private sector, which I did. And Donald Trump, interesting enough, I think he graduated the same year I did. And he chose not to. And he went into real estate. But he has been a big supporter of veterans, and in particular, the Veterans Day Parade. Because there are expenses that you need to pay for when you have a parade in New York City. And it's known that Donald Trump made a significant contribution one year to make sure they could have their parade. So I thought it was truly fitting that they invited the president to speak at this occasion. It's the 100th anniversary. And I was scratching my head. I was wondering why didn't, I would have thought a number of presidents over the years would have spoken at their parades, but apparently not. So he was the first president of the United States to actually speak and attend the Veterans Day Parade. Now, without further ado, let's listen to President Trump. And I won't interrupt this. It's not a long speech, but I think in honor of the veterans, I'm not going to be commenting until after the speech is over.
Well, thank you very much, Stanley, and thank you for your tremendous support of this wonderful parade. Today, we come together as one nation to salute the veterans of the United States Armed Forces, the greatest warriors to ever walk the face of the earth. Our veterans risked everything for us. Now it is our duty to serve and protect them every single day of our lives. It is truly an honor to come back to New York City, right here at Madison Square Park, to be the first president ever to attend America's parade. To every veteran here with us, to the thousands preparing to march on Fifth Avenue, it'll be really something. And to the 18 million veterans across our country, the First Lady and I have come to express the everlasting love and loyalty of 327 million Americans. I want to recognize Department of Veterans Affairs Deputy Secretary James Byrne for joining us. Thank you, James. Thank you, James. Great job. Pleased to report that our administration and all of the work that we've done, the veteran satisfaction with the VA is at 90%. It's the highest rate ever recorded in the history of this particular program, and that's awfully good, and we're very proud of you and the Secretary. Thank you very much. Great job. Also with us is New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. Thank you. Along with many other distinguished guests, thanks as well to everyone at the United War Veterans Council for putting on this incredible event, including Bill White, Doug McGowan, and a very special acknowledgement to someone who has devoted his life to this parade, Marine Vietnam veteran Vince McGowan. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thanks you, each of you, and all of the supporters whose generosity make this parade possible. Tremendous amounts of work has been done, and tremendous, frankly, amounts of money has been donated, and we appreciate it, and we appreciate Stanley. We're very glad to be joined as well by the Honorary Grand Marshal of the parade, Marine Corps Commandant General David Berger, and the Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, Troy Black. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. Let us also show our profound appreciation to the 2019 Grand Marshals of the Parade who have served in World War II, Korea, Vietnam, the Gulf War, and Iraq. This morning, as more than 30,000 patriotic Americans lined the streets of Manhattan, we carry on a noble tradition that began one century ago. In 1919, the people of this city filled block after block to welcome home General Pershing and his 25,000 American soldiers after victory in World War I. Just a few years before, many of those soldiers had boarded ships not far from here at Hoboken Port. More than 4 million Americans fought in the Great War, and more than 116,000 made the ultimate sacrifice. At the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month in 1918, the armistice was declared, the war had come to an end, and the Allies achieved a great, great victory. Every year since, on November 11th, we have shared our nation's deepest praise and gratitude to every citizen who has worn the uniform of the American Army, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard, and Marines. We are profoundly moved to have with us veterans of World War II, including one of the Grand Marshals, Woody Williams. Thank you. Thank you, Woody. Thank you very much, Woody. To each veteran of the war, the glory of your deeds will only grow greater with time. This city is graced by your presence. This nation is forever in your debt, and we thank you all. We're also pleased to be joined by veterans of the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the Gulf War, and the War on Terror. You are the reason our hearts swell with pride, our foes tremble with fear, and our nation thrives in freedom. Would you please stand so that we can honor your heroic service, please? Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you all. Each year, this parade highlights one branch of our military. This year, we honor the elite masters of air, land, and sea, the legendary Leathernecks, the feared Devil Dogs, the first to flight, the United States Marines. Let's hear it. That's great. Yesterday, we celebrated the Marines' 244th birthday. That's pretty good. The few and the proud are always faithful, and they always win. I also want to thank the Marine Corps Law Enforcement Foundation, which provides scholarships to children of our fallen heroes. To every Gold Star family, we will stand by your side forever. It is very fitting that the Veterans Day Parade begin right here in New York City. Since the earliest days of our nation, New York has exemplified the American spirit and has been at the heart of our nation's story of daring and defiance. On July 2, 1776, the British Armada sailed into New York Harbor, numbering more than 400 ships and carrying more than 30,000 men. The British came here to snuff out what they thought was just a minor American revolution. Didn't turn out to be that way. But the Redcoats did know, what they did know was they were going to have a problem, but they didn't know that New York would meet them with the fearsome power of American patriots. In World War I, New York regiments like Harlem Hellfighters, the Lost Battalion, and the Fighting 69th were revered all over the globe. During World War II, 63 million tons of supplies and more than 3 million service members shipped out of New York Harbor. On September 11, 2001, the whole world saw the horror and responded to America's wicked enemies with unwavering courage, unbreakable spirit, and resolve that is deeper than oceans, fiercer than fires, and stronger than steel. Last week, I was honored to award the Presidential Citizens Medal to an extraordinary American, Rick Rescorla. Rick enlisted in the Army at the recruiting center in Times Square, became a great war hero in Vietnam, and then became head of security at Morgan Stanley in the World Trade Center. On September 11th, he saved 2,700 lives before giving his own. Today, we are immensely grateful to be joined by Rick's son, Trevor. Thank you, Trevor. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. To Trevor and every 9/11 family, we pledge to never, ever forget. The towering spirit of strength that we see in this city lives within the heart of every American warrior. From the snow of Valley Forge to the jungles of Vietnam, from the forests of Bellawood to the beaches of Normandy, from the mountains of Afghanistan to the deserts of Iraq, that spirit has helped our fighters defeat tyrants, conquer fascism, vanquish communism, and face down terrorism. Just a few weeks ago, American Special Forces raided the ISIS compound and brought the world's number one terrorist leader to justice. Thanks to American warriors, al-Baghdadi is dead. His second in charge is dead. We have our eyes on number three. His reign of terror is over, and our enemies are running very, very scared. Thank you. Thank you. Those who threaten our people don't stand a chance against the righteous might of the American military. In a few weeks, we will mark the 75th anniversary of the Battle of the Bulge, our nation's bloodiest battle of World War II. More than 47,000 Americans were wounded, and 19,000 gave their last breath for their country. We are proudly joined today by a veteran of the Battle of the Bulge, a native New Yorker who is 94 years old and still going very, very strong, Corporal Jack Foy. You look good, Jack. You look good. Jack enlisted in the Army right out of high school. He fought through brutal months of the campaign in northern France. On Christmas Eve, after marching nearly 100 miles in the snow and sub-zero temperatures, he arrived outside the town of Bastogne in Belgium. For 2 weeks, Jack fought under ceaseless artillery fire and helped push the enemy back from a critical road. At one point, a mine blew up, and it destroyed his vehicle, badly hurting many. He was wounded 3 times, but he kept on fighting. After the Allied victory at the Battle of the Bulge, Jack fought for the remaining 9 months of the war across the Siegfried Line, up the Mosel River, through the Rhineland, and all the way across Germany until he reached the gates of Ohrdruf, concentration camp, the first Nazi camp to be liberated. That was number one. That was a big, big event. As Jack has said about the Battle of the Bulge, when the chips were down and the situation was desperate, the American soldiers stood up to be counted. For a brief moment in history, these men held our nation's destiny in their hands. We did not fail. Thank you very much, Jack. And Corporal Foy, we will forever be proud of what you and your fellow soldiers achieved for all of humanity. Also here with us today is Lauren Matthews, the granddaughter of a Battle of the Bulge veteran who has since passed away. His name was Master Sergeant Roddy Edmonds. Like so many of our veterans, Roddy never talked about the war. Laura never knew her grandfather's story until she embarked upon a school project about 10 years ago. Roddy was in the 422nd Regiment, which was overwhelmed when the Nazis launched their surprise assault. He and his men fought for 3 treacherous days before being taken as prisoners of war. After they arrived at a prison camp, the German commander sent an order over the loudspeaker. The Jewish American soldiers were all told to step out of line during roll call the next day. Knowing the terrible fate that would come to his Jewish comrades, Roddy immediately said, "We're not doing that." He sent orders to have every American step out of line with their Jewish brothers in arms. The next morning, 1,292 Americans stepped forward. The German commander stormed over to Roddy and said, "They cannot all be Jews." Roddy stared right back. He said, "We are all Jews here." At that point, the German put a gun to Roddy's head and demanded, "You will order the Jews to step forward immediately, or I will shoot you right now through the head." Roddy responded, "Major, you can shoot me, but you'll have to kill us all." Something. The German turned red, got very angry, but put his gun down and walked away. Master Sergeant Edmonds saved 200 Jewish Americans, soldiers that day, so proud to be Jewish and so proud of our country. Lauren, thank you for being here today as we remember your grandfather's unbelievable and exceptional valor. Lauren, please stand up. Thank you very much. One of the 200 Jewish American soldiers who were saved that fateful day is Staff Sergeant Lester Tanner. Lester is now 96 years old. And he joins us here. Boy, you guys are looking very good. 96. Lester, you're really 96, Lester? I don't believe it. You're looking good. Thank you very much. Thank you also for your very noble service and for sharing this incredible story with the world. Thank you very much, Lester. The men and women who have donned our nation's uniforms are the bravest, toughest, strongest, and most virtuous warriors ever to walk on earth. You left your families and fought in faraway lands. You came face to face with evil, and you did not back down. You returned home from war, and you never forgot your friends who didn't return, including prisoners of war and those missing in action. Every day you think of them and pray for them, but your greatest tribute of all is the way you lived your lives in the years since. You raised your families, you endured the wounds of war, and you endured the pains of that memory. Yet you keep going. You keep serving, you keep giving, and you keep loving. You volunteer at your local veterans post, and you keep in touch with your battle comrades. You support our Gold Star families. You take care of our wounded warriors, and you stand alongside of our service members when they return from war. On Veterans Day, our nation rededicates itself to our most solemn duty. While we can never repay our warriors for their boundless service and sacrifice, we must uphold with supreme vigilance our sacred obligation to care for those who have borne the battle. In just a minute, we will have a moment of silence, and we will lay a wreath at the Eternal Light Monument. As we do, with God as our witness, we pledge to always honor our veterans and pay a mortal tribute to those who have laid down their lives so that we might be free. Together, we must safeguard what generations of fearless patriots gave everything to secure. We will protect our liberty, uphold our values, and defend our home. We will ensure that righteous legacy of America's veterans stands as a testament to this nation from now until the end of time. To every veteran here today and all across our land, you are America's greatest living heroes, and we will cherish you now, always, and forever. Thank you. God bless our veterans, and God bless America. Thank you. Thank you very much.
That was President Trump today, Veterans Day, November 11th, 2019, giving the first presidential address celebrating our veterans. Now, one thing I would like to add, if you're on campus today, what I suggest you do, there is a nice display honoring those that made the ultimate sacrifice from Texas. And you have pictures by year from all the services, men and women, who died in the service of their country. Spend a minute just reading some of the names, the years, look at the faces. They all had loved ones, families. They were making careers of the military. Many Marines, but many Army, Navy, and Air Force, Coast Guard. And as you get towards the end of the display, you see how many Americans lost their lives or were missing in action in the various wars in the last century and this century. So spend a moment just reflecting on that. Now, I want to change the subject. This week, I think the Democratic Party is making a big mistake. The impeachment hearings, or inquiry, begin with testimony Wednesday, and then I believe testimony Friday. They have yet to come up with any impeachable offense or crime. And because of that, they have no evidence of it, yet they proceeded on this. Why? I'm sure there are many Americans now and even after the inquiry are going to be asking the question, why are we having these proceedings? It's a combination of a cover-up of what happened in 2016, a cover-up of a conspiracy that we will be hearing a lot about. More and more details as the people that were involved in this conspiracy, and I'm talking in the Obama administration, high government officials and people on their staffs that participated in the surveillance spying of not only Donald Trump, but the people in his campaign. This is the first time in United States history we have a scandal of this magnitude, and it touches the White House, the president, some of his advisors. It goes to the Department of Justice, the Attorney General, the Deputy Attorney General, and others. And the FBI is under the Department of Justice, but it also goes to the FBI. Its director, its former director, let me say all of these are formers in terms of the high-level people. But you had people on the staffs of these departments that were aiding and abetting this crime, because it is a felony, a crime to use federal government assets and personnel, in this case primarily in the intelligence community, to spy on the American people. And that's what they were doing. They were spying on the American people. Oh, they gave a pretext for doing it, but they didn't follow protocol or procedure. You're supposed to verify all the information when you go to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court and ask for a warrant. The FBI didn't do that, and they admitted from the application that it was largely based on bought and paid for information, bought and paid for by the Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee. Had they disclosed those two facts, they never would have gotten a warrant, and they never should have gotten a warrant. They were misrepresenting the situation to the court. So you have a number of people, many of them have already left government, especially the political appointees. They were either fired or resigned. But that's not sufficient to restore the integrity of the Department of Justice, the FBI, and the Central Intelligence Agency. They were involved because there's an international dimension to this. All of the details and the information will be coming out as, I would say, several dozen people are indicted for their felonies. It is the greatest political scandal in U.S. history. It's beyond the pale. And it was done with the authorization of President Barack Obama. He authorized it, and the partisans in his administration executed it. They were looking for information that could damage Donald Trump and his efforts to win the presidency in 2016. They thought that Hillary Clinton would win, and they hoped they would come up with information that would be devastating and really be the knockout punch that finally defeated Donald Trump. They never came up with any evidence. They came up what I call empty. But then when Hillary Clinton lost, initially Donald Trump, I believe, first of all, was surprised that he was elected president. but wanted to let bygones be bygones. But the Democrats couldn't leave it alone. They persisted in their folly by trying to repurpose that Christopher Steele dossier and the information in it, none of it which is true. It was largely fabricated by Russian government employees. It was very much a disinformation campaign, but it was intended to be used as opposition research. Now, opposition research, there's nothing illegal about opposition research. Because many times you discover your political opponent has some issues, if you will, that would and maybe force your opponent, if disclosed, to withdraw from the race. That's what they were looking for. And they came up with that Hollywood Access tape, totally unrelated to the Russian charges. What they did after Donald Trump won was try to convince the American people, and they're still trying, that Donald Trump was somehow conspiring with the Russians and Putin, and that's why he was president. There's yet any evidence at all that that ever happened. It was a smear campaign from the very beginning. They were looking to smear Donald Trump. They failed to do it before the election, and they failed to do it after the election. And it was the political elitist establishment in Washington, primarily in the intelligence community, the so-called deep state, I call them the bureaucrats, that did this. So now the pendulum is swinging back the other way. And hopefully, and the American people are expecting this, that justice will be done and those that violated their oaths of office to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution are brought to justice. It remains to be seen whether that will happen. Many, and I would say the majority of President Trump's supporters, and let me make clear, I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican, I wouldn't vote for either of these parties because they're largely corrupt, bought and paid for politicians that have mishandled the financial situation of the United States for decades and now are bankrupting this country. If you continue to vote Democrat and Republican, nothing fundamental will change. How corrupt have they gotten? The Democratic Party is politicized and criminalized. They're trying to, at least. Differences in policy, especially in the foreign policy area. They seem to have forgotten that it's the American people that elected Donald Trump. He won fair and square. He got 306 Electoral College votes, of which 304 voted for him. You only need 270 to become president of the United States. Whether you like him or not, he is your president, and only he has the executive power, not the bureaucracy, not the deep state. They have forgotten that. They have spent too many years as government employees thinking they're the only ones that can determine policy and execute policy. Yet there's a long history of presidents of the United States using people that they trust, have confidence in, to go outside the bureaucracy, go outside of channels. As a matter of fact, that's what they call it, back channeling. And sometimes they use people from the bureaucracy, but many times they really use people that they have confidence in, know they're loyal to the president, and they know they're up to the job. That is exactly what President Trump did when he used his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, to go to the Ukraine because the Ukrainians were asking for help. And it's important to understand this. Rudy Giuliani didn't ask for this assignment. It was the Ukrainians, the newly elected government, that were trying to get information about the conspiracy that I just highlighted. I really didn't give you a lot of details. I've done that in past shows. And I know future shows, as the indictments are announced and the prosecutions start, for the next 2 to 3 years, the American people that don't already know what was going on, people that are regular listeners to talk radio, and it does to some extent depend on which shows you're watching, are aware of the general outline of this. But you're never going to see this on the network news stations. They were very much defending Barack Obama. And this, once it's fully developed and prosecuted, Barack Obama's legacy and his reputation is going down the tubes. This is beyond the pale. Why they ever did it escapes me, other than they thought they could get away with it. This is the biggest abuse of power by any president. And I dare say at least half the American people don't know anything about it. And to some extent, it's going to surprise them. Now, if you're someone that listens to talk radio or presents talk radio shows, you will know many of the details. Not all of them, because there are new details coming out this week. Not from the impeachment hearings. And hopefully I'll have time later this week after we hear what the witnesses have to say in public. Now, the testimony has been leaked out by the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff. And yes, the media has gone over with a fine-tooth comb that testimony. But what does it seem or appear to be? You have a number of what I will call bureaucrats. They like to say, well, I've dedicated myself to public service. Well, good for you. But the president decides the policy, and the president decides who he wants to implement that policy. And if he decides not to go through the Department of State or his ambassadors, that's entirely his prerogative. And when you understand why he's suspicious of the so-called deep state, he has good reasons to be suspicious. Because, like I said, you have people in the prior administration, the Obama administration, in the White House, in their Department of Justice, the FBI, the Central Intelligence Agency, and other agencies. We don't necessarily know all the details. This will do serious damage to the Democratic Party. Now, why did I lead with this or pick this story? Rudy Giuliani is part of it, but he's not the important part here. What the Democratic Party is trying to do is distract you with the assistance of big lie media, the television networks, and your large city papers that are still publishing, thinking by distracting you that when the news comes out in glorious detail and in technicolor, that many of you want to pay attention to it. You see, the real scandal, why people know the general outlines and know the names. We're waiting, and the American people are waiting for justice, because it appears that if you're a high government official, a Democrat, you're beyond the rule of law. You're the exception to the rule of law. Well, that does not sit well with law-abiding American citizens that have served their country, and they do not like what they're hearing. Because the United States government used its surveillance power against the American people. Illegally. Oh, yes, they tried to have a fig leaf of a warrant application that was, as I said, misleading, a fraud on the court, by not disclosing critical bits of information that should have been highlighted from the start. They knew they would never get a warrant. Had they told who paid for it, the Hillary Clinton campaign, the Democratic National Committee, they paid for it. And the FBI, who's supposed to verify all information in a warrant application, simply did not do their job, did not inform the court that they couldn't do their job. They couldn't verify any of it. Now, I've had many shows over the last couple of years on this. Frankly, I'd rather not cover this. And I thought wiser people in the Democratic Party would prevail. But it seems we have a lot of sore losers. The crime that Donald Trump, in their minds, committed was winning the election. A lot of career plans were ruined when Donald Trump won. But you see, what the conspirators didn't count on is the president not only won that they didn't want, but he's going to use and is using the Department of Justice under Attorney General William Barr to go after those government officials and those government employees who betrayed their oath of office and committed crimes against the American people. That's what they did. And if they can do it against Donald Trump and Republicans that were involved in his campaign, they can do it against anybody that's an American citizen. This is an affront to and a threat to the American people. It cannot and should not happen again. I'll paraphrase President Trump. This should not happen to anyone. any future president. It shouldn't have happened at all. These people lacked integrity and betrayed their oath and betrayed their country, and they betrayed the American people. And what do? They turn around and go after, with a smear campaign, the elected president. Shame on them, but they don't have shame. They believe that the end justifies the means. And the end is to impeach and convict Donald Trump. They know they never will succeed, but they're going to try. Call it political ambition. I call it incompetence, stupidity, and they deserve what they get in the 2020 election. I believe the American people, once they learn the full details of the what I call the Clinton-Obama-Democrat criminal conspiracy. Some call it, like President Trump, Spygate, because he was spied on. But he wasn't the only one. You see, the Obama administration did it because they knew, they thought and knew they could do it and get away with it, because Hillary Clinton would be elected and all of this would be conveniently swept under the rug. I hope I'm right. Because I think it's incumbent on President Trump and the people in the Department of Justice to clean up their mess. The American people have a very, very low opinion of Congress and their institutions because they've learned that they have been betrayed, not only here, but by one party in particular, the Democratic Party, but to some extent the Republican Party as well. They're no longer concerned about their voter base, about American citizens that have put them in power for decades. They're more concerned about giving citizenship to people that break into this country, either flying in legally on a visa if required, and then deciding to overstay their visa because they like it here. They don't go home. And in so doing, they break a law, commit a felony. That doesn't stop them. There have been estimates that's probably 40% of what I call the illegal alien invasion. And then you have the remaining coming largely through the U.S.-Mexican border. And this has been going on for 33 years. And because it's gone on so long, and because we have not protected our own borders from this invasion, and it is an invasion, we have tens of millions of illegals in the country, and the American people don't want that. They want the rule of law enforced. But again, you have arrogant politicians, the political elite, that have done this to the American citizens. There is a fundamental disconnect between the political elitist establishment in Washington and the American people. And many of them put them in power and continue to do it. This is dangerous, ladies and gentlemen. And what the Democratic Party is embarked on with these impeachment proceedings, they will rue the day that they went down this road. You must convince the American people, public opinion, that Donald Trump is truly guilty of committing high crimes and misdemeanors, and they haven't done it. They have not done it at all. I firmly believe they will fail. They will fall on their faces. If they're smart, they'll stop it. If they're not smart, and I have no reason to believe they are, they will continue. And then come Election Day 2020, many, many Democrats will lose. Keep in mind that there are a couple of dozen Republicans that are retiring from the House and the Senate. But because of this scandal, most of it happening in 2016, continuing into 2017, they need to cover it up. And they've been successful largely because the big lie media simply will not connect the dots at all. They want to protect the guilty, including the former president of the United States, attorney general, FBI director, CIA director, many of their deputies and staff. This is outrageous criminal behavior, and the American people are demanding that the laws be enforced and the guilty be prosecuted. Mr. President, we're waiting. Don't disappoint the American people on this. You have been falsely accused. You have a right to be mad, but please, Mr. President, leave it to the Attorney General and the U.S. Attorney to prosecute many of them who are lawyers that should have known better for violating not only their oaths of office, but violating the law because they thought they could get away with it. And they thought the ends justified the means, the ends being the election of Hillary Clinton as president. Well, the ends don't justify the means, especially if the means are criminal. And I've only given you a fraction of the details. It would take several hours giving chapter and verse. One name that comes up a lot is Rudy Giuliani. The bureaucracy, the deep state, deeply resent Rudy Giuliani. And they fear Rudy Giuliani. That's why they're trying to smear him. Anyone that comes to the defense of the president gets the same treatment that President Trump did. They will smear, lie about him, and that's largely what you hear on the major networks and CNN. President Trump calls it fake news. I call it junk journalism. It's essentially progressive propaganda. The technique is the big lie. Repeat it, repeat it, repeat it. So many Americans think it's true just by the repetition of it. Oh, they resented the fact that Rudy Giuliani went to the Ukraine, worked with the Ukrainians. What did they have to fear? Oh, yes, he would get information on the government of Ukraine's interference in the United States election and the Democrats that were aiding and abetting that. And that will come out. This Wednesday, we'll hear testimony. I plan to listen, if not all of it, most of it. I will be more than surprised if they truly have solid evidence. As President Trump says, read the transcript. It's online. That's the best evidence. And most, if not all of these witnesses, were not in on the telephone conversation. That's generally called hearsay evidence. They heard someone talking about it that maybe was on the conversation. And they didn't agree with what the president was doing and how he was doing it. If you have that fundamental disagreement with the president, my recommendation is you resign. That's the appropriate thing to do. Or retire. But no, they're testifying before Congress. Now, let's be fair here. Most of them were subpoenaed to do so. Some, even if they are subpoenaed, refuse to go. Now, Congress would say that's an obstruction of Congress. I say this is politics, rather dirty politics, and you brought it on yourselves, and you better grow up. Donald Trump, in my mind, barring a major recession, that's probably the only thing I could see that could knock him out, is going to be reelected president. And in the process of doing it, many of the guilty parties involved in this conspiracy will have their day in court. And where the evidence convinces a jury that the person is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, many of them should be going to prison. They were arrogant, righteous partisans. They were plotting against Donald Trump and the so-called whistleblower, technically he's not a whistleblower, was in on that plot. Yet Adam Schiff refuses to call him as a witness. He should be the first witness. He's up to his eyeballs in it. That's why he's not going to testify, because there are a lot of Republicans that would ask him very pointed questions. And oh yes, we know his name, and he leaked classified information. He has some exposure there. I hope President Trump, if they can prove he did it, prosecute this guy. He's was part of the conspiracy. They want you to think that what President Trump was doing, using his trusted advisor, Rudy Giuliani, who's also his personal attorney, he's working pro bono. And let me say something about that. He can work pro bono because he gives a lot of speeches, he has a consulting practice, and he has been friends with Donald Trump for many years, and they both have confidence in each other. And that's the situation with most presidents. You don't make new friends when you're elected president. Now, that's not really entirely true, but the point is, it's people you've known for many years before you're elected president, where there's loyalty, respect, and where the person has experience and competence that presidents turn to when they lack confidence, in this case with the Department of State. Oh, yes, the Department of State was involved in this, the extent of which will only come out after we see the indictments. Remember, Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, and many of her supporters thought she was going to win, and once she won, they would be rewarded with appropriate positions in the new administration. In other words, a lot of career plans were ruined when Donald Trump surprised the Democrats and won. So I will be following the impeachment proceedings. I'm debating whether to try to have a show, Wednesday show, covering some of it, and then probably a Thursday show covering more of it. I don't think I can do it in one show, because they're going to testify for hours, folks. What do I think will come of this? Nothing should come of it. They should end it. The best advice I'd give the Democratic Party is end it Friday. Forget about it. Because if you continue down this road, you're only going to hurt your own party. And I mean severely damage your own party. You do not have the American people behind you. Many people that are not Trump supporters don't like what they're seeing, don't like what they're hearing. These hearings are to cover up the conspirators in the Obama administration. That was their first objective. The second, it was a campaign to smear the reputation of a sitting president. And thirdly, this is their 2020 campaign. They deserve to fail. What they're doing is unconscionable. It's undermining governmental institutions. And the gentleman running it has a well-deserved reputation for being a pathological liar. A partisan, but that's the person the House Speaker chose to lead this. Oh, he can talk the talk to people that are the true believers, the Kool-Aid drinkers in the Democratic Party. But he's not convincing most people, especially when they see he lied. The biggest example, recent example, what tripped up the Democrats is Donald Trump releasing the memorandum of conversation summarizing this call. Anyone that's read it, looked at it, studied it, there's nothing wrong here. You see, what Chairman Schiff did in front of live television cameras was lie what supposedly President Trump said. None of it was true. All he had to do was just read the transcript. And as people have done that in the media, they know that Adam Schiff lied. He said he was doing a parody. It shows a lack of judgment if he truly believes that. And he's the one that is refusing to let the so-called, I believe is a phony whistleblower, testify. The Democrats should insist that he testify, but Adam Schiff is trying to block it. That's not going to convince the American people. If anything, he damages his own cause of trying to impeach Trump. And remember, impeaching does not mean you're guilty. Impeachment is very much a political process. It's similar to an indictment, but it's really the Senate that decides whether the person that is impeached did it. And there's nothing that they have shown so far that rises to the level of an unambiguous, impeachable offense. That is their fundamental problem. So the cover-up, the smear campaign, and now the impeachment, I call it a campaign event for 2020, will go forward. But the American people will speak Election Day 2020. And I believe that Donald Trump will win in a landslide, and the House, the Senate, and the presidency will be controlled by the Republican Party. So when you break the law, there should be consequences, and I think there will be consequences. And the people that aid and abet covering up your crimes are as guilty. They're trying to demonize Rudy Giuliani. As Rudy Giuliani says, State Department asked me to be involved. And the new Ukrainian government had his own investigation going on. He didn't start an investigation. Donald Trump wants to get to the bottom of what happened in 2016. And I think as that happens, more and more details, and to some extent, some that we don't even know about, will come out. That's why you won't, under a House Intelligence Committee controlled by Democrats, you'll never get the whistleblower, the leaker. That's what he really was. He was leaking classified information, and he was involved in this criminal conspiracy. He should be the first witness called. Instead, we're getting ambassadors, State Department officials, bureaucrats that weren't happy with the president using Rudy Giuliani or his policy. Well, I'm sorry, gentlemen, women, ladies. The president, especially ambassadors, you serve as at the pleasure of the president. He makes the decisions. You implement or execute those decisions. And if you can't or won't, resign, retire. Don't try to undermine the existing president. And that's the appearance many people listening to this, I think, are going to get and are going to be surprised. No one elected any of these people president of the United States. Nobody. And as the president says, I don't even know most of these people's names. Never met with them, never talked to them. And that's the essential point. The president decides how and who is going to execute what he wants done, and he doesn't have to consult, although he does, the Secretary of State. These bureaucrats have, I think, lost perspective. They think that because they've been in Washington for many, many years, they're wiser and better than the president and the people that support him. Well, they can think that, but I think they need to be disabused of it. So we'll be covering the impeachment proceedings and reactions to it. I don't think this is going to work, but I believe they will persist until it becomes apparent to everybody that these proceedings are collapsing because they failed the minimum requirement of coming up with a legitimate and impeachable offense with evidence. They have failed that minimum requirement and deserve to be defeated. Thank you for listening, and now, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.
You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com. and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.